Hi, this is comedian Liz Blanc, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Gigi Chick, presented by Above Below Entertainment.
Setting where we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. My name is Jess Falstick.
And I am Gigi Chick.
And today we have host of... What do you host? You don't have a showcase, do you?
I do not.
We have amazingly hilarious...
Life host.
Hysterically funny comedian who's regularly nominated for all the best of awards in town because she's fucking hysterical, Liz Blanc.
Hilarious.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for being here.
Hi.
Heck yeah, thanks for having me.
I was
me.
Super excited. Like, normally Jess will text me like... So this week's guests are going to be this person. I'm like, oh, I don't know them. Okay, cool. And this week she texts, I'm like, I know those people. And Liz Blanc is hilarious.
Mm-hmm. She was very excited.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really happy you made it. Your default setting is, what do you want to call it? Something to do with feminism.
Yeah, I would just call it like, I don't know, like kind of ingrained common sense feminism.
Common sense feminism. I love it. That's a really, really good way to put it. So... Where does that come from, do you think?
I think it comes from my upbringing. Okay. My parents had similar careers. They were both teachers, and they're the same age. So, like, they always had similar salaries. And they really, in my opinion, didn't take on super traditional gender roles.
Okay.
And my mom was probably more of a decision maker than my dad.
My mom, too.
I think that... And my dad has always shown so much respect to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
I when I would go somewhere and like mm-hmm. someone's family dynamic was different than that, like the dad was the boss and the wife was submissive, it was weird and like would make me uncomfortable as a
yeah,
child.
Yeah, I understand that. Mm-hmm.
So I don't, it's something that's always been ingrained to me that women should have, you know, as much power as a man.
Sure.
Yeah.
Me too. And I think that that's very much where I struggle. And I mean, I think we'll definitely dive more into this as we get into it, but where I struggle now with the idea that I was brought up in such a similar way that it never even occurred to me for the most part that women were ever considered less than, if that makes sense.
Right.
So my biggest struggle has been relating to sort of the plight of women, like the things you hear with the Me Too movement and all of that. It's not stuff that I ever personally experienced. And mm-hmm. that's the thing I want to be better at understanding, I think, mm-hmm. because I literally did. I grew up with all boys. My mom was like the head of the household. And it was weird too. There's this weird sort of almost, I'm saying weird a lot because I'm really high.
Weird.
There's this interesting sort of dichotomy or paradox, or I don't know what you want to call it, but where I grew up, the women were much more expected to be independent and like athletic and like no one liked the cheerleaders in our school. Like mm-hmm. if you were a cheerleader, you were like a weirdo mm-hmm. That no one wanted to date. But if you...
That's so strange.
If you were like a basketball star or you ran track or like any of those things, like all the guys, like especially the hot ones, wanted to date like the girls who were like playing basketball. They, mm-hmm. There was like a girl that like joined our football team that like... dudes were asking to prom. I mean, like,
oh wow,
it was so revered to be, if you were a wilting flower, like you got made fun of. Like I would tell a story too about one time I totally monopolized the conversation. I'm sorry. I went after prom and my friend was buying alcohol and he's like, what do you want? And I was like, a wine cooler. And everybody in the car is like, what are you, a girl? And I'm like, yes, actually, as exhibited by this frilly dress. Yeah, no. So it's weird to me because I, you know, now that I'm in the city, I don't know. It's just weird that like people are like, yeah, fucking women, you know, don't get paid as much and they don't get as many opportunities. And I'm like, that's nuts. I don't even understand. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I think, I think we see a lot of what I've kind of called Facebook feminism, where yes. people rant a lot
yeah.
And it's like all about mansplaining and just things of that nature. And
it has a very negative tone to it, like angry tone.
And that's fine. Like, I've made a few negative posts on Facebook probably about sexism. I'm sure I have. And
you are one of the most positive people I know on Facebook.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. That's not saying much.
Again, for what it's worth.
Facebook's a terrible place.
Twitter is worse, but we'll talk more about that later.
You are the coolest person in hell. You are. Out of all the people in hell, you are the least hot, Liz. That's what you're saying. No, but thank you for that, I guess. I appreciate that I'm not the worst person on Facebook. But yeah, I see a lot of that, and I wonder what they're doing other than reposting and ranting.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, because it enlightens a lot of people.
Right.
But I personally make a lot of effort to support female businesses, female doctors. All my doctors are female.
Okay.
With the exception of ones where I was either recommended by my female primary physician to them because they were the best and happened to be male.
Yeah.
But I really seek out female doctors, female dentists. When I had my house repainted, I found a painting company owned by a female.
Cool.
So I just try to do...
That's awesome, yeah.
I just try.
So you mentioned, you know, you have that sort of ingrained that, like, women are equals and all that kind of stuff. When did you start taking a more active interest and more proactive step and doing things like only hiring women-led companies and things like that?
I would say when I moved to the city.
Okay.
Only because they were more readily available.
Okay.
Where I'm from and where I was living before, which is the Canton area, I'm not sure if it would have been easy to find a painting company owned by a woman.
Okay.
I don't know.
Right.
And with the Cleveland Clinic and University Hospitals right here, you can find a female doctor who's fantastic in any discipline.
Yeah.
I mean...
So you would specifically request female doctors?
And, yes, okay, absolutely.
Cool.
And like I go to counseling for like my anxiety and stuff, and I requested a female...
I did too, actually. That's what I was going to say. I've never specifically requested anywhere except for therapy and counseling is I want female counselors.
Yep. And I specifically requested a female therapist who had had weight issues or who had dealt or who had dealt with people who have weight issues.
I had no idea you could be so specific. That's really interesting.
And they found her for me. And she went from being overweight to she's now run marathons.
That's cool.
And she's just like this wonderful human being. And I don't know if I would have found her had I not requested such a specific person.
So when did you move to the city?
I moved here in 2010.
Okay, so you've been here 8 years now.
Mm-hmm. Where did you move from?
Canton.
Okay.
And is your family still... Your family's in Chicago now, right?
Or... My family's in Canton still.
Canton. Okay.
The Canton area.
Okay.
Kind of spread out, but yeah.
But and that's both sides of your family are still down there?
Pretty much,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Do you go home ever to visit? Or
I do. Probably like once a month, once every 2 months.
That's me too. Yep, exactly.
Holidays, Mother's Day, all that good stuff.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, same. So when you... Where'd you go to college?
Akron.
That's right. I heard that joke a million times and I totally forgot it. She has amazing jokes. You guys should look her up. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, so you went to Akron, you then moved here when you were done with college?
I taught for 2 years in the Canton area, had an apartment down there in Maslin, which is like another small town kind of down there, and taught down there in a rural area for 2 years.
Okay.
And then I moved up here.
You work in city schools now.
I desperately wanted to teach in a bigger, more diverse environment, and I got it. I sure did.
We're going to talk about that later, too.
What you wish for.
Oh, man. So when you were in college, did you actually take any, like, women's studies or anything like that?
I did not.
Okay.
I loved, what was it called? Humanities in the Western Tradition. And that did explore a lot of issues with, like, women in history and, like, the development of gender roles and things like that, especially through, like, art and writing. And we talked about, like, how sexist Freud was and, you know, all these philosophers and stuff. And that was cool, but I just wanted to get my credits and get out.
Really? You didn't want to learn anything?
I didn't take anything extra.
Okay. You just wanted to get... No, you got your teaching degree?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
Very cool. And you could do that with both undergrad and through your graduate program for education, or how does it work for your program? You just could do an under, like a 4-year?
I did a 4-year, okay. And that like qualified me to teach.
Okay.
I had to pass like the tests.
Okay.
And then get a certification.
Okay.
And you just renew it. I think I renew every 5 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Give the state some money and they let me keep teaching. You have to take 6 graduate credit hours to keep renewing.
Oh, okay.
But I have a master's. And then I had a master's.
So yeah, I feel like, don't you have to get a master's to do, because I have a friend who she does 8th and 9th grade history, mm-hmm. and I know she had to get a master's, but I wasn't sure if it was different based on.
You don't have to, but if they're going to keep making you take graduate hours to renew,
You might as well
just do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't. Okay. I gotcha. So you could keep doing the credit program if you didn't want to go through graduate school.
Right.
Do you think it'd cost about the same amount?
Yeah, I think eventually it just
adds up to be as expensive as grad school. Fucking college, man.
Might as well just go to grad school.
It's funny. My parents beat into me that, like, I should go to college. And so I did, because my parents didn't go to college. And then, like, I was so happy that I did. But now that I'm looking at, like, these kids now, and I'm just like, oh, this is a hoax. Like, all of this is a sham. Like, I mean, for what they charge. Yeah, for what they charge. I mean, to go to school for even a year now, like.
Yeah. I've thought about, I only have my undergrad from CSU. I double majored in criminology and sociology, and I've thought about going back for my master's, but mm-hmm. I've never had something like so specific that I'd want to study.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I haven't even figured that out. And then just the idea of having more financial aid, I'm just like, and like debt and like just dealing with that. Right. I'm just like, meh.
Yeah,
you'd have to be like very motivated and have something specific that right. you want to go towards.
Right.
Like for me, like, because I'm not, you know, like it makes sense for teachers if they're required to take a certain amount of credit hours anyways, but especially for me who just has a full-time like career already.
Right.
You'd have to be like very motivated.
Right. And if it's not going to guarantee you any type of pay bump, why would you
exactly.
waste your
That's
time?
That's kind of where I'm at. Yeah.
So at what point, because, you know, again, if we're talking about you being, you know, literally defaulting to, women are equal, what point did sort of the notion appear that that hasn't always been the case, or that's not universally like what people experience?
There have been a few times just throughout elementary school hearing boys say like girls are dumb, or boys getting called on first, you know, in math and science.
Oh, wow.
Especially.
Okay.
Things like that. I don't like when men call me sweetie and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me so angry.
Yeah.
Hun.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me?
I hope it's okay that I occasionally drop a BB or, you know, things like that when you and I are texting.
And it's different when female friends do it,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Because I can tell that you're not being demeaning.
Condescending, yeah.
You're not being condescending. Yeah. But, like, I had a male booker call me a sweetie. He kept calling me sweetie. And I'm like, first of all, I know you live with your parents.
No, you listen here, sweetie.
I have a mortgage and a master's degree. Just, like, leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly. Shut it down.
Amazing. So what else besides the sweetie thing? Oh, you said it was the boys getting called mm-hmm. on a math. And so I thought something I wouldn't even notice mm-hmm. when I was that age. And you just remember it.
I do, yeah.
That's funny.
And then I had an aunt who, like, didn't take her husband's last name.
Mm.
She goes by... my mom's maiden name, actually my stage name in comedy, Liz
Blanc. Oh, okay.
Blanc.
Okay, cool.
So she still uses Blanc, and I just thought, like, that was so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And even though my mom is this strong, powerful, amazing woman, she still took my dad's last name.
Okay.
Like, it was, like, not even a question.
Yeah.
And my aunt didn't. Mm-hmm. And that was just something that, like, stuck with me where I was like, whoa, like, that's cool.
Whoa, you can do that.
Like,
yeah.
She's, like, holding on to herself more than most people do.
Yeah.
And then
also,
when I...
Also, that's just a cool name. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool
name. I'd want that.
Yeah.
And then when I got older, I realized that the changing of the last name was a financial exchange, a transaction, you know?
Yeah.
You went from being owned by your father, and then you mm-hmm. were owned by your husband.
Yeah, oh shit. Oh my God, how have I never put this shit together?
So,
yeah.
In my mind, I'm
like
property,
yeah.
Why would I ever do that?
Yeah.
And I'm not putting down women who do. I did.
That's my name that I have now is my married name. Yeah. And it just goes better with things like default setting and shit like that. So, but yeah, anyway, sorry, carry on.
And I mean, if you dig, like my sister's getting married soon. She's getting married July 6th and she loves her fiance's last name. She loves him. She wants to have the same last name as her future children.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just like literally an expression of love. Like yeah. It's not even like a question
of, yeah, right. property right. and stuff, yeah.
But I get that. I get that reasoning, and I think that's great. I would never put another woman down for doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But I don't think it would be my jam.
You, yeah.
Unless they'd have to have like a really sweet really last name. Last like name.
Power.
Or like a cool like Italian last name that like ended in a vowel. Like Pescatelli or Pangrazio or something. Yeah. I might take it then. Just to like watch people not be able to pronounce it.
I always think that actually when I hear like people who have really crazy last names and it like doesn't sound good with their first name. And I'm like, no, if that was me, if I was marrying a guy and that was his last name, I'm sorry. If I was marrying anybody and mm-hmm. that was their last name, I would be like, no, shut it down. Like, and I don't even like my last name, which is Fisher.
The way that I found out my husband's last name, we were dating in college and we worked at we worked at the book depository at Ohio State and we had to fill out timesheets, which we just had in a binder in the front of like the room. And so we'd been dating 2 weeks and I was too afraid and embarrassed to ask him his last name at this point because we've been dating 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I started flipping through the thing and I was like, Falstitch. That sounds like balls itch. That's disgusting. I would never take that man's name. And here we are. So yeah, I completely relate to what you're saying. So it was just kind of these little observations you made over time.
Yeah.
That
when I was in middle school, Just a Girl by No Doubt came out.
Yeah.
I think I was just fifth or sixth grade. Yeah. And I remember just listening. I had the cassette.
Like that's
Tragic
long
Kingdom.
Ago.
Love
yep.
It.
Tragic Kingdom. That. And I would just listen to that song like over and over and over. Mm. And like I would go from being like enraged to being like little activist to like being upset to
the whole spectrum.
Crying a little bit.
It was a journey.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just kind of like it just brought out all these emotions in me that I didn't know were there.
So how, in addition to, frequenting female-run businesses and practices and things like that, do you also sort of dwell in the feminist realm these days? I mean, not to say you need to do more.
Right,
I wasn't
right.
sure, like, if there's anything you read, anything you write about, anything, like, specific entertainment-wise.
I mean, I read, like, Bustle and...
Okay.
Jezebel,
okay.
Vox, things like that.
Okay. Do you read those for a specific like feminist take on things or are those pretty much the exclusive sort of online resources you use for news or what?
I wouldn't say they're my resources for news. They're my resources when I feel like hearing opinions that are probably like mine.
Yeah, which we all do.
Same reason I watch The Daily Show and
okay.
things of that nature. No, my main news sources are New York Times and Washington Post.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, that's the thing. I know a lot of people do exclusively read sites like those because they want to live in a bubble and they don't
right.
want to hear the opinions outside their own. At what point did you start to see things as, because this is the classic struggle, I think, with feminism is there are so, and I mean, this is really any sort of ideology, but there's just so all these different, everything branches off in 100 different directions mm-hmm. as far as like what you should and shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you sort of find where you fit in that whole sort of like, how would you describe like what your sort of core values of like what feminism should be and that kind of thing?
My personal core values would be pro-choice, being pro-choice.
Okay.
I donate to pro-choice organizations when I have extra money. Mm-hmm. I did some work with Lady Parts Justice. I volunteered with them in New York and then I volunteered with them at preterm.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that. My friend raises money for, like, a bowl-a-thon or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have all kinds of events, don't they?
Oh, they do. They yeah. do. And they're a wonderful women's health clinic. Everybody should be, like, anti-domestic violence and stuff. Yeah. But I think it's important to examine those things a little closer. Why are they happening? Why do we view women in the manner that we do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, why are we kind of viewed as disposable mm-hmm. when men aren't?
Right. For yeah. sure. And like, I mean, so the thing I love about Liz is that she's self-identified feminist. There are very few of them, of my friends, whom I love and adore, but that are self-identified feminists and are, as positive and as rational headed. I feel like, I don't know, like, it just feels like there's so much anger right now and like the whole, and I'm just wondering like what your take on all of that is, like what your...
I would rather, and this is with like any interpersonal communication, like instead of going after somebody on Facebook, I'm going to text you about it.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this. Yeah.
I'm going to text you directly, or next time I see you, I'll say like, hey, when you said that, that made me feel this way. Like, how did you mean that? Or were you aware that like this had happened? Or just, you know, just kind of explain my side. I'm not, I'm like, I just, I don't want to go after somebody on Facebook. That's not my type of thing. Sure. And I think focusing on little, like, for lack of a better term, micro issues, like mansplaining. Every time a guy gives me a piece of information, I'm not going to give him a lecture on mansplaining.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I absolutely agree. And that's the thing. Anyone, anytime, he might even have the right answer, and they're just like, oh, mansplaining. And I'm like, can you just let the man allow to talk? Like, this is kind of nuts.
And if I'm being interrupted or a guy's treating me crappy in a conversation, I'll be like, stop interrupting me.
That's a rude person in general.
I'm not going
to. So you don't jump to, like, sexism.
Yeah.
As opposed to just saying, okay, this is a very, someone's like, situational, like, thing that's happening.
Right.
And they're not, they're, like, not listening to me. And this is, like, miscommunication. And
Right. Yeah. And not everything is an attack.
Right. Yeah.
Like, Facebook, you can't hear someone's tone.
Yeah.
You don't know the,
sometimes there's just a very broad, like, ignorance.
Right.
We talked about this last week. There was an incident on the Cleveland Comedy Board where there's a kid, he's a comedian, and he is known to have autism. And unfortunately, if you don't know that, some of the stuff he posts, you immediately, if you put him at the same level as someone who's fully functioning, that's a weird thing to say.
Right.
And it ended up blowing up because it was just like, this kid's autistic, and most of us knew that, but everyone who didn't were like literally just wailing on this guy about like, how dare you say these things? And then even after it was explained he was autistic, they really didn't seem to back down. And that's kind of the struggle I have with online, is that it's just a feeding frenzy of...
I did observe that, and I don't know him personally. I don't even think we've met in person.
It's probably good. He's a hugger.
Oh,
like, yeah, I don't like hugs. Just come right up and hug.
Yeah, if you don't hug me. I don't do that sort of thing. But I don't know him personally, but had I known him personally, I probably would have thrown him a DM.
Right. And that's what Josh was saying last week. He's like, I've known that kid for a while, and I should have set him aside and like, okay, I know you don't understand this, but you can't talk like that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, we have a few people like that. I mean, you have a few people like that at any workplace, school, anywhere.
It's everywhere. People gather. And people ruin it.
My bachelor's is in special ed, so I can get a little sensitive, you know?
Yeah.
Get a little sensitive. I saw a video of a gentleman. He was, I think, no doubt on the spectrum, the ASD spectrum. And he was on a train in New York City. And it looked like he was self-stimming.
Okay.
Like he like had his backpack and was kind of like moving a little bit. And it didn't appear sexual to me. But these women on this train started screaming at him.
Yeah.
And it was clear it was like a comfort thing, and he had something going on. And they kicked this man off the train. This group of women.
Yeah.
Screaming at him, and I'm like, this guy obviously has something going on, some kind of disability, and you just kicked him off the train. He might not even know where he is. You know, agencies and stuff help people with transportation, but like, they teach you how to get to like your home to work. Like,
not what happens when you get kicked off a train.
Right. They don't teach you, like, they don't always teach you like a comprehensive, you know, like, you don't have a map in your head, you know. And I just felt so bad for that guy. And I read the comments, and someone were like, oh, that pervert, we're so glad he got kicked off the train. And then other people were like, he seems autistic. He was probably like self-soothing and, you know, had no idea what was happening. And it was just, it made me sad. And I think that we see that a lot, especially on social media, because people can videotape someone doing something strange and get attention for themselves.
Right.
They get their likes and their comments and stuff. And it's just, it's so insensitive.
Especially, it's at the, it's exploitative, really, because you're taking another person's disability and making it like your own person.
And it's definitely like, I mean, as someone who takes public transportation every day for the past 10 years, I mean, I've seen so many people who I, you know, not even being like trained to recognize this, I'm like, mm-hmm. they're clearly somewhere on the spectrum.
Right.
And they might make me feel uncomfortable mm-hmm. by what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where it's like, unless this person is like trying to assault me, like,
right.
just ignore it. Like, it's one of those things right. you just have to understand that, like, clearly that person's not intentionally doing something to harm you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that applies to social media, too, though. It's just, like, there's so much of, like, stuff people say that you can just ignore. Like, you can just unfollow. You don't have to, like, actively go after that person and start shit because you don't like what they said or the way that they said it. Or, like, so much of it seems to be straw man, too. Like, so much of it seems to be, like, someone will say something and they're like, oh, but you don't also like this? And they're inventing like this mm-hmm. fake narrative of, you know,
mm-hmm.
you hate everybody because you only said you liked this one thing. And it, where does that even come from?
I almost feel like nowadays there is no in-between, or the in-between isn't so much allowed anymore, or mm-hmm. like you viewed as like, black and white. Exceptional, like acceptable. It's this like, you're either very liberal or very conservative.
Right.
And people in between who maybe aren't even in between politically, but can see both, are yeah. able to see both sides and understand both sides
yeah.
of situations. Like, it's like, there's no place for us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
And it's,
that's why those,
and it's hard. So like, you know, that you don't want to get into yeah. situations like, or conversations like that on mm-hmm. social media because
that's why I have like 5 friends.
It's just not going to be productive.
They're all like, they're like-minded. They're like, I can actually have a rational conversation with mm-hmm. people and not assume that this person's coming from here or there or anywhere else. And I don't know. The thing that made me the angriest about like sort of just that immediately post-Trump presidency, like right after he got inaugurated, was like how rabid people were getting about like, I think the New York Times tried to do like a, they were trying to go down into like red states and find out like why poor people, you know, seem so supportive of Trump and like what's right. going on there. And then the immediate take I kept seeing on Twitter was like, yeah, why don't we just go find out what the deal with murders and rapists are too? And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like,
it's like, whoa.
If you're going to be preaching like tolerance and acceptance and, you know, everyone except for people who voted for Trump, then fuck that. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I just have never understood the inability. And I think that's where I get frustrated with most people I know who identify with feminism, is it's just, it's a lot of screaming and hysteria and anger, and they don't want to hear it, and they don't want to hear it.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if you've had any insight of people that like you're close with or that you've experienced that you get why they're that way, or you at least have an insight as to why that sort of stuff happens.
I do. A lot of people I talk to were just maybe raised religious.
Oh, religiously. Okay. So it's like a knee jerk.
So I kind of see my friends who take on more traditional gender roles
mm-hmm.
and are kind of cool with Trump and the things that he says mm-hmm. and like other men who aren't very kind to women and the things that they do. It seems to sometimes be based in religion.
Okay. Okay.
And I've kind of pulled away from the church.
Sure.
My feminist values. And I hate saying the word feminist because it makes it sound like I'm militant and I want
yeah.
to put men down. I like the term gender equality.
I like that too.
That's
a good point, because that's the thing. Feminism has sort of gotten this tarnished, like, as you said, militant, like, fuck all men. You know what I mean?
Right.
So and it sucks because it didn't always mean that. And it, you know, it shouldn't have to mean that. But to your point, that's why I feel weird about that word.
And that's part of what drove me away from the church.
Okay.
And my parents go to, my parents are Methodist, and my mom grew up United Church of Christ. So these are liberal Christians.
Yeah.
These are very open-minded Christians and stuff, but it's just, I have found the more I learn, it's probably just not for me.
About like the history of Christianity or?
Right. The history of Christianity, the roles women played, the way we treat women.
Mm.
I think a lot of those things are rooted in religion.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're willing to let those things go mm-hmm. and just like look at the world for what it is
yeah.
instead of looking at it through a religious lens.
Sure.
I think I'm personally better off.
Yeah.
I also sure. think it's interesting though, like, cause I was raised very religious. Like, I grew up in a Baptist church.
Mm.
But when I look at it and like think about it, any time in scripture that it's like just men talking, mm-hmm. that's definitely the content where people could see that and be like, whoa. Like, mm-hmm. this, you know, just like you were saying, this doesn't really align with, like, what I believe, and I don't really like what this is doing to society and how people are taking this, like, to heart. But at the same time, any instance where it's Jesus, it's like he actually was breaking, like, all social norms and boundaries. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that he was, like, speaking to women, like, culturally, mm-hmm. like, the fact that he would appear and be seen with a woman alone was, like, completely contradictory to that culture and society at the time and their religion.
So you're saying Jesus was a feminist?
Jesus was a complete, like, yeah, I mean, like, he was friends with literally everybody, and, like, that's, like, is talked about even, like,
yeah,
with, like, prostitutes. He, like, he didn't want to hang out with the religious people. Mm-hmm. Like, those weren't his people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, shown in so much, like, so much scripture. But then, like, when it's actual just, like, people talking and saying, like, this is how it is, like, that's when I feel like it starts skewing a mm-hmm. little bit. So I don't know, it's just interesting. Yeah. I think it's more of the religion
mm-hmm.
and not, like, the foundation of it.
So what I kind of thought you were saying at the beginning, but I definitely see what you mean now, is so you have the people who are sort of rabidly stuck in the conservative sort of ideals, which mm-hmm. we think greatly stems from religion. What I am most, and I think I understand that a little bit more just because that's kind of how I grew up. Not with my family immediately, but, like, all the neighbors surrounding.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everyone my parents live around still are, you know, Trump supporters and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They're, like, the only ones. But overall, I think where I have the hardest time, the types of people I have the hardest time understanding is the sort of other side of just very dramatically angry at these people to the point where it's like, fuck them, fuck their opinions, fuck their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from? Because that part I don't have any life experience mm-hmm. to know where that comes from. And I feel like that's what, maybe not to that extreme, but just to the idea that, like, anytime anyone posts anything that can be considered problematic, that person gets a lecture. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or just, where does that sort of, like, I mean, I don't know if any of us have the answer to that, but you've definitely mentioned, like, and you've shown, like, you're very much more, I like to say, like, I don't have principles, like, because I just feel like I don't have any really guiding things that I've ever thought that much about, kind of right. like you have. So I guess, where does your sort of drive or passion come from? And do you have any, like, theories on how it kind of, the fire sort of burns over when you start to, like, be a feminist or be a, you know, in favor of gender equality, all the way into, like, you're just angry at every man and all the patriarchy? Like, how does it get from A to B?
I think it depends on your life experience. Like, I haven't had a lot of experiences where I've been mistreated by men to the point where it's, like, damaged my life.
Okay.
You know,
right.
I haven't been assaulted. I'm under a contract at my work where I make the exact same amount as anybody with my education level,
okay.
And years experience. But I could imagine what it must feel like to work for a corporation
yeah.
and be overlooked constantly or make 70% of what the males are making.
Yeah.
I can imagine it's very hard as a woman to get through medical school. I'm imagining that they probably have to work harder than most men, especially yeah. white men.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So I'm sure, I think the anger would come from that. It's probably really hard to work insanely hard and not be able to get as far as people who are right beside you.
Sure.
Because of your gender.
Yeah. Do you see any progress having been made, like, in the last 5-10 years? Do you feel like it's just kind of the same, or it's gotten worse, or as far as equality?
I mean, we have more and more women going to college.
Mm-hmm.
More women are graduating from college than men
mm-hmm.
right now. I think that the Me Too movement has opened up some eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we see more and more powerful men being brought down and being made an example of, which is good.
Yeah.
It was definitely needed, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
I want to say yes, but then at the same time, we had the most qualified candidate ever run for president. She happened to be a woman and didn't win.
Yeah.
She lost to a reality TV star.
Right.
So I'm not sure, if I'm being honest.
Are you a pretty diligent voter?
I am, very.
Yeah, me too. Which I don't think is very common mm-hmm. in our generation. And I think that that's a big part of it too, is that, you know, you have everybody who has these, that's the thing I think that, and you know, this could be straw man on my part, but like, I'm constantly seeing everyone getting so mad on Facebook about this and that, about whoever's mm-hmm. being elected to office, but none of these fucking people seem to be voting. Cause
right.
they come back with the voting statistics. Just this last election day, it was like 20% of like registered voters in Cleveland voted. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how is that fucking possible?
And I agree, if you don't vote, I don't agree that if you don't vote, you can't complain. Because you might have an expertise and a perspective to mm-hmm. offer, even if you didn't vote.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Get your asses out there and vote, people. It's not that like, hard. I don't know what else to tell
it's
you.
It's the easiest thing. It's free. There's like buses that'll take you there.
Right. Yeah.
I think people, it's almost, it's not that people don't want to, but it's like a lack of education on mm-hmm. the issues and the candidates. Like, people don't feel informed enough mm-hmm. to go. And vote. So they feel like they're, I'll just stay home.
Maybe then. This is real shit, but I feel like it's better than nothing. I have been using the Plain Dealer endorsements just as a cheat sheet when I go in to vote, because I don't have time to research all the issues, mm-hmm. but I trust their judgment enough to say, okay, if you tell me to vote for this circuit's judge, then mm-hmm. I will. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel like that, you know.
But yeah, it takes effort. You have to put effort into it mm-hmm. to figure it out. And
yeah. I don't know. It just seems like that's also a pretty easy thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, people for some reason think like you have to know, like, if you don't know who all the other people are, just vote for mayor if you care who the hell the mayor is. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Right.
Just
skip everything else.
Yeah. Skip everything else. You don't know the issues. You don't know.
But
you
that's mm-hmm. really where change is going to happen yep. and build up in a positive way and make change is voting on these, you know, elementary levels. It's not yeah. necessarily the presidency.
It starts at the local.
It's all of this local government. Yep. So,
and that's the stupid catch 22 is that everything that ends up at the federal level has to start somewhere. And most of right. the time it starts with local government.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And no one finds their local government as interesting or as sexy as, mm-hmm. you know, the state mm-hmm. government, and the state government's not as interesting or sexy as the federal government. Mm-hmm. So until you get to vote for something at that level, no one gives a flying rat's ass. And then, mm-hmm. And then everyone wonders, my always thing is always like, well, the classic argument my friends have told me when they say they don't want to vote is, it doesn't matter anyway, both of them suck. And I'm like, you know how you can prevent both of them sucking? Vote in your fucking primary. And mm-hmm. then you get to decide mm-hmm. who you're voting against. And that makes a huge difference.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my person didn't win the primary. I was a Bernie supporter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Still am a Bernie supporter.
Right.
But I knew I wasn't voting for Trump.
Right. And that's exactly the same for me. I voted for Hillary because it was not the other guy. I right. mean, straight
well,
up.
Especially
right.
in Ohio. I mean, it was like we needed to make sure Trump didn't win Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of pressure.
I still maintain, and this is our 9/11 was an inside job conversation from last.
Oh, God.
That was the last, when we were talking to Josh, came up. My whole thing is, I'm still, because I'm like insanely optimistic, I choose to believe that while I know a lot of people voted for him, I just choose to believe it had mostly to do with like Russians fucking with like everything. And like, it, you know, like there's probably a good,
I don't,
you know,
doubt it.
There's probably a good 5 million people that did vote for him, but I want to say the rest were Russian bots. Just,
I mean, I definitely think it played a part, but also people sincerely wanted Trump to win. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many people out there that were like, you know, this guy just says what he wants and says what he means, and it's completely different than any other politician we've had. Like, no one else has stood up for us, so we might as well take a chance. And, you know, he was very much, mm-hmm. like, standing up for these, pulling out these, like, really extreme core values that they already had.
Right.
But didn't necessarily, you know, completely direct their life at that point. Mm-hmm. But he was pulling out, like, I am, you know, pro this and this and this, and it was just speaking right to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, just right towards the demographic. So it's kind of one of those things. I mean, I believe that people for sure wanted him.
Are you in the mindset, this is something, especially as a person who works in IT, I want to be realistic and say I can't be so naive to believe that someday we won't all be the people who are like, how do I use this computer? What the fuck is happening?
I know that's going to happen to me.
And so there's part of me that can't be so naive to think like all of a sudden we're the magical generation that when we hit 80, we're still going to be like programming fucking whatever the hologram shit is then. But are you of the mindset that if like a certain demographic or older generation tends to like phase out of the voting population, that things will change, or is it pretty much like it doesn't matter?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. I mean, millennials seem to be a lot more progressive.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, especially in the city and where we live in the Midwest. Yeah. Maybe down south it's a little different.
Yeah, that's true. I say I have a lot of cousins my age that have a lot of guns. And okay. Ain't nobody coming to take
but also,
guns.
I feel like ideals like that are just, it's like such learned behavior that part of me is like, just like there will always be bad people right. in the world, I feel like there's always going to be this portion of the population that has right. these like really extreme views.
Right.
I think so. I think it is starting to dwindle.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're not seeing as many super religious people. I mean, there have been studies that say less and less people are going to church, things like that. So I don't know. I hope we see more people who are willing to kind of be in the middle.
Operate on logic instead right. of emotion.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of cousins, and I have younger cousins, younger than I am, who have the conservative political beliefs of like an 80-year-old white man.
Yeah.
And it's where is this coming from? And it's right. so strange. It's just like this such like ingrained learned mm-hmm. behavior.
I think a lot makes of things, me worried. I was watching a lot of that Sarah Silverman show where she yes. She would talk to the people
loved it.
And it was
that's
so
a good show
because it really
and I
is.
Like I really really respect her
yeah
because I sincerely know that she like
is trying.
Enjoys like hearing other people's perspective mm-hmm. because that's how you gain knowledge. You can't just only hear your own opinion.
One of my biggest takeaways I saw from that is that like you know you talk about. Yeah, there's some things where people are still crazy racist or mm-hmm. they're still crazy into their guns. But one of the biggest things that I thought was neat is almost everywhere she went, for the most part, in like very rural areas, were like gay marriage is absolutely okay. Like mm-hmm. we're completely, you know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. that's a huge shift. You know what I mean? That's representative of something
right.
has changed. You know what I mean? That people are just like, yeah, that's not a big deal. You know.
I unfortunately yeah. have found. I have a lot of friends who, if it doesn't affect me, I don't care about it.
Okay.
Like, I was speaking with a friend not long ago, and they were like, well, I'm not gay, so I don't care about gay marriage. I'm not in a labor union, so I don't care about union rights. Mm-hmm. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm never going to have an abortion. I don't care about, you know, reproductive rights. And it's like, but isn't there a point where you need to advocate for other people.
Compassion.
Like, isn't there just, especially, you know, this person is white and middle class. Like, I feel like it's kind of your duty.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term, to do what's right and to help people who might not be treated fairly by the government.
Right. And that's another thing I worry about, the sort of flip side of millennials is that we are notoriously like, me, 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 everything's about me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that that's true across the board, but it's been noted that our generation is becoming more and more, not even just selfish, but isolated. Like we tend to just close mm-hmm. ourselves off from friends, from family, like, and we either talk to them strictly through our computers or on our phones. And, you know, there's far less human interaction.
I agree.
And so with that, is that going to lead to a potential lack of compassion, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. for wanting to fight for rights that maybe don't affect you directly, you know what
no,
I mean?
No, yeah, that's a good point.
So,
I mean, even since I was a kid, it's just so drastically different.
Mm-hmm.
Like the amount of face-to-face interaction you have with other humans.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I don't know if we've talked about this before. I'm an extremely extroverted person. Like, I love being around people. I actually quit my last job because I worked from home and I mm-hmm. needed to, like, be in an office around people every day. But I hate talking on the fucking phone. I absolutely hate it.
I do too, actually.
And that's, like, a little millennial thing that we constantly mm-hmm. get called out on. But it's like, I think for me, it's like you can't see the person's face and you'll go to talk and then you're just constantly, like, stepping on each other's words.
Right.
And, I don't know.
And I found pretty much the only people I talk on the phone with are loved ones.
Yeah, my mom.
Mom, dad, once in a while, sister, aunt.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you've talked for 5 minutes, you've kind of gone over everything, and then you're like trying to think of things to talk about.
Yeah!
What did you have for lunch today? What did you have for lunch? Like,
yeah.
It's just, I
it
don't know.
It feels really effort. Forced, yeah. almost.
Because that's yeah. the thing, phones, you still have the etiquette of, like, having to say goodbye.
Yep.
Text, you can just, like, stop fucking texting.
You can.
And then 20 hours later, you can pick the conversation back up mm-hmm. again, and it was like nothing happened.
It's like an easy way out, yeah.
yeah.
Anytime. Anytime, excuse me.
We have a friend, she and I have a mutual friend who she's super adorable. I don't know if she's ever done this to you, but anytime we'll be talking, she'll be like, okay, I have to go now. And like, she'll explain like what she does. And it's just like, I think she feels compelled to be like, I'm going to sleep now. And I'm like, you could have just gone to sleep. I wouldn't have been upset if you stopped that for me. It's very cute. So I want to get back to this. So you said you started working in a rural school.
I did.
Okay, so let's talk about that. What was that like?
I was still teaching special ed at the time, which right now my job is very unique because I teach English. I still have the special ed degree, though, so I write IEPs, and I serve special ed students part of the day. And then I run the work-study program, which has all special needs kids who are also at risk.
Okay. Holy shit, guys. That's a lot.
So I'm going back next year to, I'll be a special ed teacher, and I'll be co-teaching English with a gen ed teacher.
Okay.
This will be very cool because it'll still be in my area of English.
Good.
So I was a special ed teacher at that school, and it was a very small school with a very small special ed population, and they just, like, treated you like a teacher's aide.
Okay.
It was awful because, like, I had all this education.
Yeah.
It's creative.
Yeah.
I wanted to, like, work so hard and do such a good job, and then it's kind of just treated crappy.
Wide-eyed optimism just shot right down.
And, I would have, like, teachers ask me to go get them coffee.
Oh, are you serious?
Right. Oh, go make copies for them. Things of that nature.
Yeah. You're a secretary.
Mm-hmm. I was preparing for my state observation, which was back when they did the praxis. They don't do it anymore. A person from the state comes in and watches you teach, and they were like, okay, we're going to prep you for it. We want to make sure you're ready. And a teacher who, they didn't have very many rookie teachers because it was a really small district. So a teacher the year before who was a general education Spanish teacher got a 56 out of 57. And they were like, you know, you're probably not going to score as well as her, but, you know, like, we'll help you. We'll try to prep you. I got a 56 and a half out of 57.
Booyah.
That's fantastic. Sounds like they did a good job of prepping you then. And you're also incredibly smart and amazing.
They were a bit ridiculous.
Really?
The person who ran the mentoring program wanted to create a fake classroom and pull
simulation.
Pull like 12 kids in there because she didn't think I'd be able to teach the large COTOT class.
Oh wow.
She didn't think I had the skills to like handle that many kids and to teach properly and things like that. And I was like, nah, I'm gonna just teach the whole class.
Oh, wow.
And when my scores came back, she was like, so how did you do? And I was like, 56 and a half out of 57. And she was like, oh, like you could tell part of her was like disappointed.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
He just ate like a victory Twizzler there. It was awesome.
I did.
Snapped into it. It was fantastic.
Victory.
You know who you are.
I really hope she's listening to this right now. So it was a how many people were at the school? Like, how big of a school was it?
Small. Probably 100 per graduating class.
Yep, that was what that
about was 450 probably in the whole school.
Yep, that was ours, absolutely. And you said you did that for 2 years?
I did.
Okay. And then did you quit because you wanted greener pastures, or what were you looking for?
I did. I was looking to get closer to the city,
okay,
closer to Cleveland. And I was looking for a bigger, more diverse school.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking to live in a deep blue area politically, which the Heights is it.
Oh yeah, Cleveland Heights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I like the East Side. I like Cleveland Heights, Shaker Heights, that area. And yeah, that's what I was looking for. And I was looking for a little more money because I was working at the Winking Lizard three nights a week.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Because I started out at like $29,000.
Yeah. Teachers are so underpaid. It's like one of my good friends is a teacher, and just hearing her like talk about like, well, I'm going to have to get a summer job because I don't make – it makes me sick.
The thing I learned from Liz is that I never knew this. It makes me probably an idiot, but I never knew you guys had to pay for all your own supplies and shit for the most part, or a lot of them anyway.
You pay for a lot of them.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate enough. My school's pretty good about it.
Okay.
I don't pay for too many basics.
Okay.
But if I want something cool, like colored paper or like just different things or anything electronic.
You have to pay for Kleenex and stuff like that?
Yes.
Yeah. They would tell us on the first day of school to bring in boxes of
Kleenex. In retrospect, I understand why they did it now. Like, it took years, but also I'm like, Oh, wow. Because you had like you had to bring like a box of tissues and
we had to bring something a lot of else. Shit.
Yeah, you had to bring like your own glue, ruler, mm-hmm. everything because yeah. they were like, we can't, you know.
Yeah.
And it's hard because where I teach is a high poverty school. Mm-hmm. So you end up just providing a lot of
things. Is it considered inner yourself. City school or how does it figure?
I would call it urban public.
Okay.
I think inner city gives it the impression of like being super rough.
Okay.
And I don't feel like in danger or anything. Okay. I'm not Michelle Pfeiffer off Dangerous Minds.
Which is ironically the fifth time I think we've talked about that on this show. That
oh, that's reference. Funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I definitely, it's urban public and it would be a culture shock for anybody who taught in the suburbs or in a rural place.
Or in
yes.
a rural place. So you yes. literally went from one end of the spectrum to
I
the
did.
Next.
I did.
So how does it compare?
I like it better in the city.
Okay.
I do.
Okay.
I like different things about each school,
uh-huh.
but I like my job. I'm valued a little more now.
Okay.
Because I'm needed.
Yeah.
Because we have a high at-risk population that needs, you know, special help and accommodations and things like that, and I can provide that.
And because you had that experience and working in all those different levels, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So... as far as interaction with students, do you feel like it's worth this kind of stuff? I mean, and the overall comparison of the two experiences, really.
The interactions with students are completely different.
Yeah.
It's harder now.
Yeah.
The kids go through a lot.
Yeah.
It
always amazes me the resilience with which, like, she'll tell me stories about what happens, and she's just laughing. And I was like, I would be full on, like, fetal position, not coming out of my house. I mean, do you get desensitized after a while?
I think you do. Okay. Like, I do get threats. I've been threatened with violence. I've been, you know, I've been cussed out. I've been threatened and cussed out through email. I've been sexually.
By who?
Students. Yeah. I've been sexually harassed by a student. And that's just kind of the nature of teaching rougher kids, but at the same time I can get away with saying more. I build a cooler relationship with them because they actually need me. The downside is you don't see the parents too much. The parents aren't too involved. They can be really hard to get a hold of. I have some really good ones, don't get me wrong,
mm-hmm.
but where I taught before in the rural,
yeah,
it was like an exurb.
Okay.
It's like a very like kind of rural suburb.
Okay.
Like if you were out in like
Medina or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That kind of,
okay.
You had the parents. I mean, you could always get a hold of the parents and the kid would act better the next day if you called home and
okay.
things would really improve.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't always get that. I sure. never get that now.
How long have you been at the urban school?
8 years.
8 years. Okay. So quite a bit longer. So you've had a lot more time to experience
yeah.
things there. So, I mean, it doesn't seem, the one thing I would say is that you don't seem terribly jaded by the experience at all. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to be super negative and my negativity, I try to just kind of keep like, I'll call my mom and talk to her about okay. things or my sister's a teacher too.
Okay.
And my dad too. So like, oh, wow. I will call them and complain and I'll talk to like my really good friends at lunch who I teach with who okay. like know me really well.
So you have a support system at work, which is good.
But I try not to be too open with my discontent.
Sure.
Yeah.
I have decided that I'm leaving the profession soon.
Yeah.
And I am going to pursue comedy full time.
Yeah.
Once I can like afford it.
I always like to say yeah. working in an urban school has to toughen you up as a comic.
I think it does.
There's nothing that can be does. Yelled at you at this point that hasn't
right,
been yelled at you
right,
at this
right.
point.
Hecklers like, are nothing.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going into comedy. Bye.
Right. It's hard for me to keep my mouth shut, though, at school. Like, I found it since I started comedy
mm-hmm.
because it's, like, improved my wit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard for me to, like, not say things back to kids that I know would, like, make them cry. Like,
but it does sound like you could probably get away with it in most scenarios. It's
I
not
maybe
like,
could.
Not like a parent's going to be around and be pissed off about it.
It's like this kid was like, F you, fat B. And I just wanted to be like, F you, third grade reading level. But like, I couldn't. You can't do
like,
that.
I shouldn't.
Not
I really shouldn't.
There was an amazing This American Life where they were talking about parenting and just like dealing with kids
mm-hmm.
and how like people, you know, the outrage machine happens where like, I think it was like 10 years ago, Alec Baldwin's daughter had a voicemail recording of him calling her like a pig and like screaming at her and all this stuff. And but the thing was, it, like, they played it to a bunch of parents. They're like, is this any worse than anything you've ever said to your children? And they're like, nah. They're like, that sounds about right. When my kid pisses me off, I'm just like, fuck you. Like, they're just like, and they're like, and I know that makes me a like sound like a terrible parent, but like, kids don't listen, and you're not allowed to hit them, and you're not allowed to, like, you know, string them up. You're not allowed to do most things. Not so anymore. All you can really do is yell, because, you know, it's the only way you can deal with. And that's, I think I'd probably have a rage stroke if I couldn't actually say the things that are like in my mind. So
I think every parent needs to just change the Wi-Fi password. Like, if your kid is doing something you don't like, they're addicted to their phones.
Yeah.
I can't get half of them off their phones during class. Change your Wi-Fi password till they get the grades you want them to get, or they do the chores you want them to do, or they're more respectful, or whatever you want from them.
Just take it.
Do that.
Just do that
thing. It's so simple, too. Right. I mean,
they can't live without internet.
No. They can't. I mean, although this is going to be the thing, though.
Can't either.
That next generation is going to figure out how to easily hack Wi-Fi passwords and pull it over.
They are.
And we're like, how did they do that? And then
I'm from Generation Hacker.
I know that is going to be. We were literally just talking about that last night. Adam was asking me what the parameters were for Gen X, Gen Millennials, and Gen Y. And then he's like, well, what comes after Gen Y? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I actually don't even know if there's a name for that generation.
Is there one yet? Millennials are 1980 to 2000, right?
Correct. And then I think 2000 is, so the 2000 are 18-year-olds. And I think that goes all the way down to, like, what, probably tweens at this point? Mm-hmm. So Gen Y.
I feel like 1980 to 2000, you said?
Yeah, it's roughly. And it varies depending on who's defining it. That
sounds like such a large gap.
It does.
I feel like it's not accurate as far as, like, establishing a...
There's a theory that 1978 to 1984 is, like, a weird, like, chasm generation. Yeah. They're calling Xennials, so they're combining Gen X with Millennial. And I actually fall into that chasm, because that's the thing. I don't really consider myself to be a traditional millennial, but I'm definitely not a Gen Xer. Like, I'm too young to be a Gen Xer. So
I fall in there, too. I'm 1984.
Yep. Yep.
So, and I do feel like when I look at my kids who are mostly millennials, I feel so much older than them.
Yeah.
And I feel like our values are so different.
Yeah, exactly.
Our dependence on technology. Yeah,
exactly.
Just, your way of, like, growing up, the way that you, like, were established as a person is so different. I mean, even, like... Well, even Justice's boyfriend Adam last night at Couch Gags, he was like, "Wait, how old are you?"
I'm
"I just turned 29." He's like, "Oh my god, I'm a dinosaur! I didn't know you were 29." I was like, "You're not a dinosaur, but yes, I."
I love how we think in terms of, like, 5 years apart makes us all ancient.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like, I don't even think about it.
Do you have an opportunity to disseminate any feminist values onto students or young women near your?
I do.
Okay.
And I'm fortunately somewhere where that's okay.
Cool.
It's okay to be pretty openly liberal and progressive and things like that. I do, like, a unit on stereotypes.
Okay.
And I use TV commercials, and I use stereotypes or commercials that stereotype women.
Okay.
And they're, like, really easy blatant and sexist, and the kids love it.
Yeah.
Because they can pick this stuff out really easily and we talk about it and things like
I
that.
I feel like it'd be funny, like, you know, to be
it's an easy conversation starter, too.
Yeah.
And we read articles and things and...
And that's all English?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. How do you relate that back to, like, English, like, as far as stereotypes and that kind of stuff?
We do a unit on mass media.
Oh, okay, cool.
So it's part of that unit.
That's neat.
I make it part of that unit.
That's cool.
And then... another unit is values of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, sadder stories and, like, things like that.
Okay.
I'll put in that unit.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What grade is it again?
Next year I'm teaching 11. This year I teach, like, credit recovery.
Okay.
So it's kind of, like, all the grades together.
Okay.
And they're on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach a class called Career Explorations, which is, like, life skills and stuff.
Okay.
But I still try to do fun stuff with them.
That's
like,
cool.
I print up articles, and you can relate, like, being able to see through propaganda and stuff in
For
a life
sure.
skills class, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of put some of that stuff in there.
I like that. How much artistic license do you get to kind of, you know, design curriculum?
In my lessons, quite a bit.
Yeah, that's
You
cool.
have to hit, like, certain checkpoints.
Okay.
In English, you have to give, like, this pre-assessment, this post-assessment, things like that. But as far as your actual lesson delivery and stuff, quite a bit.
Okay. Do you like that?
I do.
Yeah.
The only complaint I have is a lot of days are taken up with testing. So, like, your contact time is cut down.
Okay.
Yeah.
But as far as creative license, like, I don't have my principal saying, you have to deliver this in this manner. You have to deliver this.
Well, and to your point, there's not a lot of political, like, static either as far as, like, if you want to be liberal, it's not like they're coming in and being like, don't teach the kids these. Because like, I don't even know if the schools can do those sorts of things. Right. But
I do stay away from things that are really, like, blatant.
Okay.
Like, I would never, like, do something that was, like, anti-Trump.
Okay.
But I might do an article on something controversial he said.
Okay.
You know.
Let them form their own decisions based off,
based off of what's said. And I only pull from, like, real sources.
Okay.
Like, I'm not out there, like, printing my Jezebel articles and, like, here you guys.
They got to learn sometime. I don't know. Liz Block, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You were awesome and a good time as always. Do you have any social media that you want to promote?
Sure. My Instagram and my Twitter are both, it's Liz Blanc. So ITSLIZBLANC.
And this will probably air middle of July. Do you have anything coming up around then that you want anybody to know about?
Oh, with my sister's wedding, it's a little busy, so I don't think I have anything July right now.
If you look up her, any kind of her social media, though, she will definitely list all her show dates and everything she's got going on. You can usually catch her probably at one of my shows at some point. We got to get you on the reverse roast battle, even if you want to do compliments
awesome.
Or if you want to do stand-up, we got to get you on that.
Okay.
Which is the last Sunday of every month at Bar Louie downtown at 7 p.m. Gigi, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at ggchick, g.g.chick.
You can catch me at epicfaul, E-P-I-C-F-A-U-L, on Instagram and Twitter. You can also catch me the first and third Sundays of every month at Skidmark Garage for our Couch Gags Comedy Showcase, which Liz was a part of the inaugural show. She did a fantastic job. I want to thank Pete Milk for doing our recording and production, and Above Below Entertainment for being our network. Okay, love you, bye.